Hello.
Oh, you're back.
I'm back.
Oh,
Hold on. Hold on.
your stuff.
Now I'm back.
Oh, you sound good now. You sound awesome.
It's amazing, like the difference between my Apple headphones, my big boys, as I call them, because I can't
Yeah.
remember what they're called.
Big boys.
Which is a good, it's good, right? It works for conference calls and Zoom meetings and all that. But then switching to a microphone, for people like you and I, Ben, who live in the
Ooh.
world of audiophiles,
Oh.
it's amazing what a difference it makes.
It just sounds mad. It sounds soothing, magical
Yeah.
almost. So I wanna come back to something real quick before we move into some food safety things.
Okay.
I'm gonna send you a link from our knowledge base. Do you have a you got a knowledge base there at Rutgers?
Apparently not a very good one. The meeting with the student. So we have a we haven't we had an event called Ag Field Day every year where we would open up the agricultural college and people would come, and it was wonderful and very successful and got co-opted by the rest of the university. And so now
Of
it's called
course.
Rutgers Day. But historically, the students have always made ice cream. And by made ice cream, I mean they buy an ice cream mix. We have a little ice cream, small scale ice cream maker, and we make our own ice cream from the mix that we buy. So it's not really our own ice cream, but whatever. You get what I'm
Yeah,
saying.
sure. Yeah.
But the student, I mean, I had this meeting with the lovely student who's in charge of ice cream for this year, and also is going to be our new president and of our club, undergrad club. And he's like, I have a lot of questions about ice cream and how we made it and how much we charge and how much we make. And I'm like, I don't have the answers to any of those questions. That has always been historically passed from undergrad to undergrad.
Yeah.
And we got to try to reconstruct all that as best we can.
Good luck. Well, and I guess you could look at it a couple of ways. Right now, you can reinvent the whole pricing structure. If it maybe it was broken before, maybe they know it's a clean slate. Also,
Yeah.
it might be a problem if it's a clean slate because there's nowhere
But
to go.
well, I mean, and pricing, I mean, I can figure out pricing. The question is,
Yeah.
how much do we make, right?
How much?
I mean,
Yeah.
how much do we make? I don't know. We make and actually that information, our my facilities guy, who basically knows how to run the ice cream machine and who monitors the undergrads to make sure they don't do anything stupid, he probably has a pretty good sense of, oh, we made so many vanillas and so many chocolates and yada yada yada. So I think we can probably get there in the end, but anyway, it was like I felt really bad because she came to this meeting expecting that I was going to know all these answers, and I didn't.
Well, that I mean, right there is department head chair talk. Is many many times people come to meetings with me expecting answers, and often I say, I don't know, what do you want to do? What do you what, yeah, how do you want to handle that? Let's talk about it a little bit. What are your thoughts? And let oh, that sounds good. That's I mean, that's the job for the most part.
Yeah, and that re well, I mean, that's the job if you're good. If
Oh,
you
I don't know.
if you're bad, you're just screaming and yelling at people and telling them what to do, and then they're angry when they don't do it.
Okay, well that's fair. Okay. I'll take that. So Don, NCSU has informed me
Yeah, they've
with
claimed the at
yeah.
NCSU domain with Apple.
Yep, they've
I don't
claimed
know
it.
what the hell that means. That's
Is
so
that
weird.
it means individuals will no longer be able to use any email address that ends in the NCSU to log in their Apple account. And this says as of March 27th, but my little message that pops up, which is on a daily basis now. I haven't done it. I haven't changed it. But I get an Apple notification. That's how I knew it wasn't phishing, right? Like it wasn't like I
Right,
got
because
an email or a
it
text.
legit
Yeah.
message from Apple. Yeah.
In their like little notification world, right? Like popping up on my things. And so anyway, the reason why I tell you this is that I got two emails today from other people, one who is on phased retirement, is about to retire. And this individual is like, I thought we got this all figured out. Why is NC State claiming my email address? And this person had not read the, like, didn't quite understand or hadn't read the email, which is Apple is claiming, or no, NC State is claiming it from Apple, not from you.
Right,
But it was
right,
very
right,
confusing. Like,
right.
and I could see where it's confusing, right? Like you get this weird little pop-up that says your email address is gone and you're retiring and you were expecting maybe that's how they handle it with people that retire. They claim my email address.
Yeah, so. but no, the issue is not that your email exists is not going to exist. Your address is going to exist. It's just yep. not your Apple ID logon.
Right. Right. And so you got to put make that a new email address. And I, for the most part, I like to route everything through my NC State world. Like it's in yeah. one place. I have a Gmail address, but right. it's not well used. Like it's right. it's a few things go there.
Well, yeah. In fact, I had somebody, and I same, right? Like I use it for almost everything, right? Goes yeah. through my Rutgers address. So much so that I really don't check my Gmail all that much. And the people who work for me to manage my retirement, they have a meeting, they want to have a meeting with me every year. And for some reason, they sent that request to my Gmail address this year. Weird. And I'm like, don't use, and it probably came because sometimes stuff gets blocked. Sometimes there's it's good to have another email address. And right. actually for the editorial stuff that I do for journals, I'll just have both email addresses there. So if something should ever happen with my Rutgers address, I've got it. Yeah, but the problem is I really ought to be better about checking my Gmail address on a regular basis, because it sometimes important stuff ends up over there. But mostly it's just a lot of like nice to know and would want to look at someday. But the problem is that the important stuff then gets lost.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I have it. So, you know, again, this is, we did calendar safety talk. Now we're into email safety talk. In my mail app, I've got both my Gmail,
yep.
like, and my NC State that comes into yep. in my inboxes. So same. I see stuff there. Yeah. And I use my Gmail address for like my kid, like all my kids' teams have like an that is involved in all the scheduling and where right. we're playing and that. And I use that. So it right. like keeps the gunk out of my NC State one, but yeah. Right. So I guess I'm gonna have to move it over. I don't know. Okay. Things I need to talk.
Oh
to
yeah.
You
yeah. You're yeah. It's going to be so you're going to have to change to your Apple logon is going to be your Gmail now.
Yeah. Or maybe I'll create not to give away everything. Maybe I'll create another Gmail account Ooh. That no one knows about for my Ooh. Apple ID. Maybe. I don't know. I
haven't decided. Well, you know, you could do that.
I have until May 26th.
That's good. Cause you know, the webpage you sent me says March 27th.
Well, I know. And that one's a little bit concerning cause I'm not involved in that. I think they gave us a little more time. Yeah. So
speaking of which, if you'll give me the listeners will never see this, but if you give me permission, mm-hmm. to share my screen, I don't have a website that I can show you, but if you give me permission to share my screen, I will share
I have done
with
that.
You. Yeah. I will share with you that.
Which
is what I see.
Every time
I go to log on, authentication succeeded with warnings.
Oh, amazing.
And apparently the warning is your password expires in 24 days. Please change your password now.
Yeah, it could be a day. Yeah. It could be 24 day. But it's
24
it's
day. Yeah.
24 day or days, however your days want to identify. as singular or plural.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So I've got to do that and then and the problem is I don't really want to do that. I probably should make a reminder to do it on Saturday. So I have the weekend to kind of yeah. have everything be discombobulated until it all syncs up again.
I'm not a fan. Like that is actually the biggest hesitation. Like if I had to, the anxiety of, when I do this, I now have to change it on every device. And that is not, I don't want to put that in my workflow. Like I never want, right. I just never want to do that. Like right. it's, yeah. Okay. I know you want to talk about something, some follow-up from our other show, because this is the show we do follow-up on.
Right.
Do you want to do that first? Or let me pitch you, two other topics.
Mm-hmm.
12 unexpected ways you can get food poisoning.
Oh, you know, I'm down for a listicle.
Yep. Or Health experts say avoid eggs sunny side up because of bird flu fears. Which of the two? Or how many days can you eat raw chicken and not get a tummy ache? Those are our three. It's a choose your own adventure, Don. Those okay, are three. Well, you have three pathways.
Yeah. So the eggs, there's an egg topic for Risky or Not that I do want to address when we do that show, but that's not this show. This is a different show.
Yeah. It's a different show.
How long can you eat raw chicken until you get a tummy ache? Is follow up for a Risky or Not that I think has not posted yet, but that's okay.
Oh, it'll post by the time. Yeah,
here's the thing, Ben. Well, you're going to send everybody an invitation when those episodes post, right?
Personal emails. In fact, what I've started doing, Don, and this is why it's important for you to check your mailbox, is I just send a nice little note card out. To everybody in the snail mail, as they say, hey, your episode's posted. I do.
Oh, just, nice.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. So check your mailboxes. It's coming.
Yeah. Oh, it's handwritten. It's artisanal.
It's handwritten. Mail's slow. I'm just gonna say that. So it's possible that you might not receive that that note ever. Yeah. It's possible.
All right. Well, let's do the listicle first, and okay, let's do it in the order that you pitched it. Okay. Listicle first. And I do have some thoughts actually on avian influenza.
Me too.
Which we can expand upon, and then we'll move on to tummy ache QMRA. So
okay.
And also, again, you'd never talk about the show on the show, or it's in the show. If it's in the show, it's in the show. Do you have a heart out?
I would say Don, you know the joke I'm going to make. I've got a semi heart out.
Semi charm kind of life.
Yeah. I need to go. I'm giving you I'm giving the listeners all the details. I'm giving you all the details. I need to go pick up a record player that I bought on Facebook Marketplace on my way to one of my kids' lacrosse games. And that lacrosse game starts at 6. So,
Okay.
Yeah. So if I was to leave here at 5:20, that would be ideal for me.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah, so we'll consider your semi hard out at 5:20.
Yeah. So
or earlier, if we get done, I mean,
if we get done,
we're not like milking it for length here. It's as long as it needs to be. That's the great thing about podcasts, Ben.
It goes until it goes. It goes until it's over. So I don't know the best. I found an article that I'm able to share with you. I'm going to give you, I want you to see how many of these, again, 12 unexpected ways you can get food poisoning. Okay. It comes from a publication that I'm not familiar with, but I love the name of it, Don. It is Your Life Choices, and it's yourlifechoices.com.au. I think it's an Australian website based on that. And Your Life Choices has other topics. So I don't know if this is going to help you in your guessing. But let me read a few more headlines from today's website. Fee-free accounts switch announced. I don't know what that means. Pet food industry faces little regulation, experts say. That's a good one for us to talk about.
Sure.
What you need to know about buying an EV with finance, and I think that's an electric vehicle. More Australian adult children are living with their parents longer. Your Life Choices is quite the publication. But I stumbled upon 12 unexpected ways you can get food poisoning from. And do you have your bell ready for this?
Ready.
From Apple News.
There we go. I knew that was coming.
Yep. Okay. So the game here is how many of the 12 can you get?
Just guessing.
Yep.
12 unexpected ways you can get food poisoning. This is a hard whoever invented this game is not a good game. We need a different way to play this game, but I can't think of one. So I don't know. Maybe you're living in Oregon and you're going out to a nice salad bar on election day or the day before, and the Sri Rajneesh cult spikes your salad bar with salmonella that they stole from a hospital.
So that would be very unexpected.
That would be unexpected. That would be unexpected to me. Go ahead.
Well, maybe let me use some word emphasis to tell you how this listicle is created. Okay. 12. Okay, let me see if I can get this right. I'm getting close to my microphone. 12 unexpected ways you can get food poisoning. I don't know if that
helped. I'm not sure that's helping.
I would so what I'm trying to do is de-emphasize unexpected, because part of the game, and I feel like
are these expected, Ben? Are these expected?
None of these things on the list are unexpected to me.
Okay, well, see, there you go. Let me give you some examples of 12 expected ways you can get food poisoning.
I would like you to do that.
Okay. Eating your meat undercooked.
Yes.
Leaving your leftovers on the counter overnight.
That one's not on the list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eating sunny side up eggs.
I will give you that one. Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Number one on the list, in fact, on is salmonella in poultry, eggs, and greens.
Okay. Eating raw cookie dough.
Nope.
Huh. Not washing your produce.
I will give, let me see. Yes. It is not clear, but number three on the list is E. coli in fresh produce and unpasteurized juice and milk.
Oh, all right. Yeah, all right. I would have said, yeah, unpasteurized milk. I missed that one.
Yeah.
That's a gimme. That's easy.
But those three things don't really go. I mean, unpasteurized juice and milk do go together, but the produce is an interesting one. So it's improperly fertilized or irrigated produce can also be a source of E. coli, particularly leafy greens. So make sure to wash leafy greens individually and cook vegetables properly to kill any lingering bacteria. So, okay. So you've got two out of the 12. You want to guess a couple more?
I don't know. I'm feeling particularly unimaginative today, Ben.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to guess anymore.
All right. Well, that's fine. I'm going to give you the list. And this wasn't a
very good game, Ben. I think the listeners are going to complain.
What, you know,
I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying it's just not a good game.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. I guess that's what you're doing. Okay. So, all right. I just thought this was like this again. And I'll go back to something I said months ago. I think AI is just making up things. Yeah. Right.
Oh, wait, hold on. So that you make a very good point. So let's test this hypothesis, okay? So I'm gonna go to ChatGPT, okay? And I'm using the good ChatGPT, the one that you have to pay for. And so let me see. So 12 unexpected ways to get food poisoning. You know, I should just.
Oh. It's good.
Food poisoning. Poisoning.
Yep.
12 unexpected ways to get food poisoning. I'm just typing that into ChatGPT. Okay. Yep. Okay. I'll read it. This is so great in real time. So food poisoning is often associated with undercooked meats, expired dairy products. I don't think so. And contaminated water. Okay. However, here are some unexpected ways which one can contract food poisoning. Here are 12 lesser known sources, and I'll just read them to you. Yep. Unwashed fruits and vegetables, ice cubes. Love that as number two.
Yep.
Condiment dispensers. Oh, and there's a sentence after each of these. I'm going to skip the obvious ones, but condiment dispensers, the spouts of ketchup, mustard, and other condiments can get contaminated if not cleaned properly, turning them into a breeding ground for bacteria. Number four, Ben, oh, you're going to love this one, reusable grocery bags.
Oh, my gosh. Fantastic. Well, so
bulk bins.
Bulk bins.
This is just turned into self-referential podcast talk.
So good.
Raw flour, pre-cut or packaged fruits and vegetables, unpasteurized juices and ciders, raw milk cheeses. No, well, it depends on the raw milk cheese. Hard cheeses are fine. Sushi and raw seafood and potluck meals.
Well,
here, and so, food sitting for long periods, especially in warm temperatures, can become a hotbed for bacterial growth.
So, okay, I did the exact same thing that you just did.
Uh-huh.
My ChatGPT is different from yours.
It is.
It says, I'll give you mine. My number one was cross-contamination from grocery bags because ChatGPT knows me, right? Leftovers left out too long. Contaminated ice cubes was number three. Raw cookie dough or cake batter, number four. Undercooked beans made my list. Beans. Certain types of beans, such as red kidney beans, contain toxins that are only eliminated through proper cooking.
All right, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad one. Unpasteurized juices. Here's one that I thought was interesting. Refrigerator drawer contamination.
see several episodes of Risky or Not.
Then there's buffet and potluck foods, improperly stored deli meats and cheeses, unwashed produce, contaminated cutting boards and utensils, and undercooked rice, which is not the right thing.
Undercooked rice is a weird one. I'm not sure that you would want to eat undercooked rice.
Yeah. So then I did something else, Don, because this is what I like, because we do this in real time. It's two guys on the internet just talking to each other, right?
Right.
Two white guys. Then I said, hey, could you tell me 12 expected ways you can get food poisoning? It's a different list, but
it is.
Let me see how many of these unexpected ways from yourlifechoices.com are expected. Number one on the list, undercooked meats. Yeah, I would say it's here with salmonella, E. coli, and minced meat. Raw or undercooked seafood, that actually comes up a bunch of times at the bottom of this page from Your Life Choices, because the 9, 10, 11, and 12 are all shellfish or seafood related, Vibrio and raw shellfish. But then we get into paralytics, shellfish poisoning, scrombotoxin in fresh tuna, and ciguatera poisoning from fish. So it's like it came out of the, you know, ServSafe book or something. Then we got cross-contamination, unpasteurized dairy products, improperly stored food, contaminated water, improperly canned foods. This is the one that I thought was really interesting on the unexpected ones. The botulism in tinned foods.
Yeah.
So anyway, listicles, whatever. Your life choices. I think they're just doing stuff.
We will link to the article. I have to say the pictures are kind of interesting. The picture that I'm seeing is a woman looking at a burger and fries, and she's holding her stomach, which is a little weird because a very unexpected way to get food poisoning would be from looking at food.
Well,
I haven't eaten yet.
This picture, I'm going to use this for show notes for our show picture. I don't know what the title is going to be, but this is the picture. So it certainly looks like that burger and fries is like photoshopped, right? Like it looks like there's a woman who's sitting at a table holding her stomach. Right. And then they photoshopped in, well, hey, we need to put food on this table. Let's make a burger and fries.
Yeah.
Oh, so weird.
So the picture of the woman was just incidental on the way to get to what I really wanted to talk about, which was the embedded ads further down. But they've changed; they keep changing all the time. But after salmonella and poultry, eggs, and greens, it was Donald Trump and Joe Biden something something. So, apparently that is you won't see that because now I see a lady with a microphone waving her hand. But anyway. Yeah, I think This article is not really any better than what we were able to generate with ChatGPT.
No.
So
It,
yeah.
it's not that much worse, but it's not that much, it's not any better.
Yeah, it's not any better. And here's the thing. I would also, so I, you know, one of the, I don't know if you can do this with your version of ChatGPT, but with version 4, you can share the prompt and the answers. What you can't do is in that same version 4 ChatGPT, there is, you also can use that for to create DALL-E images, right? But because of something about the way it's implemented, you can't share those images. You can cut and paste the image, but you just can't share a web link to the image. But I do actually want to I want to see how ChatGPT does with respect to the image. So image of a woman looking nauseous and staring at a plate of food. So
Oh, I can't wait.
let's see how my show art compares to or my suggestion for show art compares to the actual show art from this particular web page. And again, I will share it's t chat ch chat GPT takes a while, but what
Yeah.
I will do is I will download it, and then I can either email it to you, or I still have privileges, so you may see it pop up on your screen here in just a minute.
I'm excited. I'm excited for this. Yeah.
But yeah, so oh so should we move on to, I think, are we done with
Yeah.
this listicle?
Yeah. Yeah. We're done
Yeah.
with this listicle. I think we can put that one to bed. And hopefully we may never come back to it. So the other, okay. So there is an article here in the Daily Mail. I'm gonna send it to you. Again, we've talked about this. The people that write the articles don't write the headlines. The headline in this one is particularly poor, I think, which is well, and the Daily Mail's is "Don't eat runny yolks. Health experts advise
Okay.
Americans to avoid eggs sunny side up because of bird flu fears." I disagree with that quite a bit. Like I can't see how. Oh, Dawn, yours is really
Isn't that
good.
good?
That's
So much
fantastic.
better.
Thank you
So much
for.
better.
Yeah, okay,
So,
send me that
yeah, I'll
one.
send you that. Yeah.
Here comes the Daily Mail article. So the reason why I want to talk about this is I talked to a journalist at the failing New York Times today about this exact question. And the journalist was like, I really, really enjoyed talking to her. And she said, she started off, she's like, "Hey, let's just jump right into this. Like, I am not convinced that, everybody who is saying this is not a big deal, is correct. Like,
Right.
is it as simple as if you just cook your food, you're going to take care of avian influenza?" And I'm like, well, it kind of is, but
Yeah.
let's talk through it. Let's talk through why. And
Okay.
I had just a lovely, lovely conversation with the real name's Danny Bloom. Anyway, I'm interested to hear your approach and take on this. Everything that I've read, there's a whole bunch of avian influenza that's going on right now. I read something, I think it was yesterday morning or this morning, about the US's largest egg producing facility has avian influenza. So that's why all of a sudden things are really, getting to the front page of the internet, right? Like it's a big thing. So the questions were like, okay, if there's a lot of eggs right now that might be on the market from chickens that were exposed to avian influenza, what do we do? And I was like, well, let's walk that back a little bit, right? Like
Right.
I would not, I don't know if that's the case, because the fact that we're looking for avian influenza because there's a bunch of outbreaks going on, and if there is avian influenza, we, because of the way that USDA regulations work, ill animals can't provide food into the food stream, like whether it's eggs, whether it's milk, whether it's their meat. That's why we have USDA inspectors at these at slaughterhouses and other processing facilities. And sure, things can like slip through, like it's not 100%, but our system is kind of built for managing this. Anyway, what like are you, I think I know the answer to this, but are you worried at all about avian influenza in food?
I am not.
Okay, good. Good.
I've got two things related to avian flu that one which I'll have to anonymize slightly, but this one was a message that came in last night at almost 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. From Victoria Forster, and she writes, "My name is Vicky Forster. I'm contributing writer for Forbes Health. Currently writing an article on whether people should be concerned about consuming foods such as chicken, eggs, beef, and milk, considering the significant uptick in avian influenza in chickens and cows in various states." And then she has a bunch of questions. Is there any danger that you know of from consuming these foods, even if the animal is infected with avian influenza? Are there any precautions that people can take to minimize or eliminate risk from foods that could potentially have come from an animal infected with avian influenza? Is it likely that some animals infected with avian influenza have already entered the food chain? And she says, if this is too speculative, please feel free to skip. And I'm like, well, it's not too speculative. I just don't have expertise. We need somebody who understands the food chain and how stuff moves into it, which is not me. And is there anything else you'd like to add? And then provide your credentials. And so the article, I put the article in the chat, so you can see that chat, that article there, and we'll put it in show notes for the listeners. But the other thing that I sent to her, which I think, did it get linked in the article? So basically, if you go partway down, you'll see previously on slightly different strains of H5N1 virus isolated in 2007, researchers have done experiments to show that although meat from infected chickens does contain live virus, cooking it as per USDA guidelines will inactivate the virus. And so I found that article for her and send it to her. And that's an article from Colleen Thomas and David Swain, published in JFP in 2007. And I want to say I was a reviewer for this article. It seems vaguely familiar. But yeah, so, and basically the bottom line is anything that you're doing to already, and this will make a nice segue to raw chicken tummy aches.
Yeah.
The anything that you're already doing to manage the risk for these foods, you're going to manage avian influenza risk, right? Yeah. There's nothing to suggest that the virus is going to suddenly become massively more heat stable. The real risk is, I think, to workers in this environment, which comes to the next point I want to make. And so I received a message. I'll anonymize all the details. I wanted to reach out and ask if you could provide some help in my literature search relating to developing HPAI situation with a confirmed case of HPAI in a dairy farm worker. I'm specifically trying to find research that supports the effectiveness of pasteurization of dairy products in reducing HPAI. Google Scholar search, I found a 2013 article that looked for eggs and egg products, not finding anything for milk or dairy as the matrix. And so my I haven't written the response yet, but my response is going to be, well, yes, you egg pasteurization works. Guess what? Cooking chicken also works. So therefore, pasteurizing, there's no reason to expect that pasteurizing dairy won't work. It'd be quite expensive to do that research. You'd need to, I guess, figure out how to naturally infect a cow and then get the milk from that cow and then take it through some sort of time temperature protocol. You could also, I guess, probably find a way to isolate the virus and then put it into milk and do the same thing. These are very expensive, time-consuming experiments to do just to prove that what we know is true, which is that you're gonna kill this organism quite easily.
Yeah. Well, and that was what was really interesting about my conversation with Danny about this was, and she raised a good point. We'll see if this ends up in the article, but it's a question that I don't think would have happened before the pandemic, which is, yeah, but right? This is a different, more, you know, highly pathogenic strain. How do we know for sure that it doesn't impact the heat stability or susceptibility of the virus? And I'm like, you're right, I don't. But this is like a very, as an organ, like as a microorganism, even influenza is highly studied, right? Like, I mean, we've known right. about it for decades. There's tons of papers. I told her that, and I may not have told you this, but I worked on a project that was not, that never got published, because I don't think it was like destined to be published, but it was, I worked when I was in grad school on a question around a highly pathogenic AI in poultry processing plants, and looking at like if how we ended up doing a bunch of swabs, like looking for indicators and the virus itself on chicken crates, and they wanted to know whether you could like crates, sorry to like get right into the weeds on this one, but in Ontario, and I don't know if this is the same everywhere, but a chicken catching is done overnight, and the crates that chickens are caught and placed into go to a processing plant. And then those crates are returned to like the next, you know, the next place. It's not an issue, because most of the time when you're catching chickens, you're catching all the chickens. So if you took it to the next place and there's still virus involved, well, you're taking those, like those chickens to be killed. Like it's not going to impact the whole thing, but there is like, an aspect that happens. And I think if I remember correctly, it's like during the cold months in Ontario, even the, like chickens are not growing quite as quick, I guess. And they are, and again, this is 20 years ago, but they're thinning the population. So they wanted to know whether they had to do this timely, like time consuming step of cleaning and sanitizing, or really disinfecting those crates, that with the thought that those crates might be the vector for moving the virus between chicken production sites, like chicken farms. Anyway, the answer that we got was like, it's not like the cleaning and sanitizing is probably a good thing to do for lots of reasons. And that's what we should be doing. You know, like, right. Yes, it all can survive, but
the scenario would be, okay, I go to a farm. The farm is positive for avian influenza. I harvest the chickens from that farm. Now the cages are positive for avian influenza. I take the chickens to wherever they're going to be slaughtered. Okay, the cages are now empty. I take those empty, dirty cages that have the virus, and I now take them to another farm that doesn't have the virus. I harvest those chickens. But in the meantime, I've got these crates there. Right. Yep. The crates are shedding virus. The crates have virus on them. The virus is getting into that second farm. Now, there's no chickens on that farm right now, but there will be. And if the virus hangs out long enough, again, we don't. And I don't know enough about this particular virus to know how stable it is on surfaces. I've got to imagine it's not that stable. But again, the levels might be quite high, right? And all it takes is theoretically one virus particle, although we don't know the dose, or I don't know the dose response function, right, for that. But yeah.
Yep. And so in the more heat, the virus is more stable in the cold.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, so like, we found that out with SARS-CoV-2 and surrogates, right?
Yeah. And this was like all about what's happening during the winter months, right? Like, so it was really, I didn't get into all those details, but I was like, this is like, yes, it's a, you know, there's a potential here that there's a different strain of this, but it's the same. We know a lot about avian influenza. We know a lot about influenza. So it's really, really, really unlikely that any changes in, you know, whatever, I assume, I don't know what the H1N1 or H5N1, those are all antigens, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
So that change is going to, that antigen change is going to make any real difference in heat susceptibility, right? Like it's not going to change the structural aspect of the virus. So anyway, that was like, you know, but I really appreciated her question, which is like, Yeah, but SARS turned into SARS-CoV-2. And it's like, well, sort of.
No. We
So,
had SARS and then we had SARS-CoV-2.
right. We had SARS-CoV-1 and we had
Right.
SARS-CV2. And
Right.
it wasn't that they turned, yes. So it's like these are related, but not, not exactly the same. But I thought it was a really good question of like, well, tell me why that won't impact the heat susceptibility or heat, stableness of it. So anyway, that's where we kind of got into. I just going back to the original article, like, are you, there's a lot of images in this Daily Mail about like runny eggs. I'm not eating runny eggs because of a like high pathogen, like avian influenza, right? Like that's the, I might not eat runny eggs for salmonella enteritidis reasons, but this is not like, I don't know. It seems like a really odd thing to focus on for me.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing, Ben. Not everyone is a chicken farmer, but many people eat runny eggs, and so it's a way of making a connection with people about something that they could be worried about. I mean, again, if it leads, it bleeds, right? It's not, it's not, it's not, it's, it's. There's a wonderful quote from The Wire that there's always a salmonella outbreak somewhere, but just because something happens doesn't mean that it's news. I mostly got that right. Yeah, so but yeah, it's I mean we need to pay attention to this, but alarming people about whether that their food is not safe is not super helpful. Although I understand why the anonymous person emailed me is that they've got to get out ahead of this to protect their brand and to be able to answer questions from consumers in an intelligent and science-based way.
Well, and that this is, I mean, we've been around this world long enough that this is like the fourth time that someone's asked me about high pathogenic
Oh,
AI in food.
interesting.
Like
Yeah.
the fourth, not the fourth time right now, but like the fourth iteration of this question over my career. Like it came up in 2003 and it came up again and whatever. Like almost every time we have some outbreak and it's still the same answer. It's like, yeah, it's not really a food. And actually that helped in the like kind of in my answer, like this isn't, this is not a new emerging problem. It's a problem that this won't be the last one. We're going to have other outbreaks related to this. And that one also, I don't think will be impacting the safety of the food that's on the, it's in the marketplace. So
Right,
there
Oh, and
one, oh yeah.
just to close the loop on H5N1, end up looking a bunch of different places to try to find this, but of course, eventually found Wikipedia, which I'm increasingly convinced with the sad state of the internet that Wikipedia is going to be one of the last things standing that will
Yes.
actually be helpful. And the H stands for hemagglutinin, and the N stands for neuraminidase. And they
Neuraminidase.
are antigenic glycoproteins on the H is an antigenic glycoprotein, and the N is an antigenic glycosylated enzyme.
Perfect. That is excellent. Thank you for closing the loop on that. The one thing that I will highlight, there is a good, I thought a quite a good article that was in the Washington Post, WaPo, and that we'll link to from a couple of days ago that really jumped into all this and I thought did a really great job explaining how it gets into places and what and what it means from a food standpoint. So
And that's the WaPo link you just sent.
it is, yep.
Yeah, cool. Oh, and thank you for using the Zoom chat because my messages is not working on my desktop once again, and I'm really irritated at Apple.
That sucks. Well, I like the Zoom chat works, so it's
Oh
good.
yeah.
It works. All right. We've led up to this point, Don. We've teased it. It's related to a Risky or Not episode, but I feel like
That
you've done some
will
math
post.
that
It's
will
not. It's not
post.
posted at the time of us recording this. Depending on when you get this posted, it may still have not posted, or it may have posted. So.
Yeah, it's possible. So what's how many days will it take for our friend on the internet to get a tummy ache from eating raw chicken? And that's the question. But what I want, and I don't know if you're going to answer that question, but well, for the listeners of this show who may not listen to the other show, there's a guy on Instagram who is, I don't think his full name is there, but I think he goes by John, and he started an account where he eats raw chicken, sometimes eggs, every day, and he says, I'm going to eat raw chicken every day until it gives me a tummy ache. And as of last look, a couple of days ago, I think he was on like day 79 or something. And so we did a risky or not on it. I think we were both risky, but you got more info.
Yeah, so I, you know, the it's let's see here. I'm just looking for why. Oh, you know what? That episode is not, it's not even in,
Edited.
it's not even on
Yeah.
the website. I have yet to create the episode, but that's good because that, I'm just looking for the, I want to give people a link to the TikToker. So let's see. We'll link to these two pages. So there we go. So oh wait, hold on one second. I want to go to markup, preview and BB edit, and then I want to go to Florida Man takes on bizarre challenge. Of course he's a Florida man.
Florida man.
All right, let's go over here and we'll go back to Florida Man. This is how the sausage gets made, folks.
It's
All
all
right,
part of it.
so yeah, so this is was an interesting problem to try to solve for a variety of reasons. It's relative, if you, I mean, so the answer to the question, Ben, is it's complicated and it depends. But let me tell you what I did to solve the problem. Well, so the there's a couple of, so and I, we sort of go into this on the Risky or Not episode, but basically, if you wanted to use math and quantitative microbial risk assessment to figure out the answer to this question, you'd need to know a bunch of different things. And one of the things that you would need to know is what's the prevalence of, and let's just simplify it to say salmonella. We're not going to look at Campylobacter. What's the prevalence of salmonella in raw chicken? Ideally, we'd want to know what is the serving size that he's consuming. We can simplify that. But the hardest problem to solve is because we're going to use a dose response function, we need to know the dose. If he happens to eat a piece of chicken, okay, with salmonella, what is the concentration of the salmonella that he's eating? And that actually ends up being the hardest piece of information to actually find. And so what I did was I did a little bit of Googling and I found an article that's written by some folks that we know, Elizabeth, or some folks that I know, and I know you know some of them. First author is Elisabetta Lambertini.
I
Second
know.
author is Giuliana Rezante.
Oh, I know them very
Okay.
well.
Yep.
Yes.
And then Robert Chu and Vanessa Apodaca, who I don't know. And then the last author is Barb Kowalczyk, who,
There we
of
go.
course, we both know. So,
Yep.
and this is an article that appeared in the journal Microbial Risk Analysis, and it's entitled Public Health Impacts for Different Microbiological Criteria Approaches for Salmonella in Chicken Parts. But the important bit of this information is actually in one of the figures, and I'll put the article in chat in Zoom so you can see it, and we will definitely link to it, and I'll put it right here. And so,
Perfect. Thank you.
the relevant figure for this is actually figure two, panel B,
Figure
and
two.
so.
Okay. Yep.
Figure two it has two panels. The panel on the left is basically the distribution of salmonella concentration on chicken breast. The left panel is MPN data from the 2012 baseline survey data set. And then they showed censored values, which were set at the lower and upper limit of quantification for MPN. So basically, the figure on the panel on the left is less informative than the panel on the right. Panel on the right is the cumulative probability So it's a probability distribution for the concentration of salmonella in log cells per gram. The interesting thing is that they have this sigmoidal curve, which is the fit of the data. That's the distribution that they're assuming. But the only data they have, excuse me, is the upper end of the curve. Okay. But if you make the assumption about that, that's the distribution, and then you can basically pick points from that distribution. What I ended up doing, excuse me, what I ended up doing is basically they don't give the equation, or I couldn't find the equation for this particular distribution in the paper, but I basically just reverse engineered it. I took a picture of the image, and I digitized the data, and basically through a little bit of sort of simple, straightforward stuff, math in Excel, I could reverse engineer that distribution. And so basically that distribution ends up being a distribution where the mean concentration is minus 3.6 logs with a standard deviation of 1.5 logs. And so now, if you do the math, if the log concentration per serving is a negative number, it's going to be, or if it's less than zero, yeah, if it's a negative zero, is because the anti-log of zero is one, right? So if you have one cell per gram, that's zero logs per gram. But if you sort of figure out, okay, what's so basically the first thing you do in the simulation is you generate a number for the concentration. Okay. Now the next thing you have to do that's the concentration per gram from this Lambertini et al. Paper. And then what you have to do is figure out the serving size. Now in the manuscript, they actually use NHANES data because that's one of Barb's areas of expertise, NHANES data to create a distribution. I said, that's too complicated. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to assume that the serving size is 100 grams. And that actually makes it easy, because if you have a log concentration per gram, and then you want to know the concentration per 100 grams, do you know what you do to that number, Ben?
Just times it by 10.
Close.
Divide by 10.
Close. You're right in that it's a mathematical manipulation.
You do something to it.
You add two.
You add two.
Because 100, the log of 100 is 2.
100,
right?
Okay, yes.
So you take the log concentration. Sorry to put you on the spot there.
Yeah,
For those of you playing along at home, please write in and tell us whether you got that right before Ben did. So basically you take that number, you generate a number, you add two. And then all I did was I said, okay, if that number after you add two is still less than is less than zero, right? Where zero is one cell. If you have a serving that has less than one cell of salmonella, we're going to assume that serving has no salmonella. Right?
Yes. Yes.
So you just generate this number, and then you take that number and you plug it into a distribution. Now, what I thought I needed was the prevalence. And so, because what you would normally do is say, okay, is it there? And then if it's there, what's the concentration? Now, it turns out that the concentration that they're using actually spans the range where it would be not there. And so what I just did is I simply said, okay, just generate a number from this distribution. If it ends up with less than one cell per serving, assume zero cells per serving, okay? And then take the dose response function, and then whatever that number of cells is, put it into the dose response function, and that generates a number between zero and one, which is the probability that you're going to get sick. And then we evaluate that probability. So if it's a 10% chance you're going to get sick, then basically flip a coin 10 times flip a coin however many times you want, and you've got a 1 in 10 chance of getting sick, right? So you can think of that as the probability that if you ingest the salmonella cell, that it actually makes its way to your intestine, attaches, infects that cell, and then later goes on to cause illness in your body. And so basically, all you have to do is to do that math. I used to use a program called At Risk to do all of this. One of the things that happened when Apple moved to Apple Silicon, that what that meant was that most I can run most Windows programs in the something like Parallels Desktop Emulator. I can't run At-Risk because At-Risk must be doing some funky stuff, as John Siracusa would say, close to the metal. Okay, and basically talking to the CPU, thinking that it's an Intel CPU, and of course it's Mac Silicon, Apple Silicon, so it's not. So that program no longer works. The good news is there is a free program called XL Risk, which basically gives you a much more limited functionality than At-Risk would, but it's essentially gives you enough to do a simple project like this. So I started fiddling with this the other day. I was procrastinating doing some other work, and I wanted to do something like vaguely scientific and engaging. So basically what I did is I did this analysis, and then I ran it a couple of times. In the first set, I ran it for 1,000 servings, and then I ran it for 10,000 servings. Now, of course, because these are simulations, what this means is that we're getting really close to your heart out, aren't we?
Oh, we're good. No, we're good. It's okay. Just, I mean, all right. Yeah. Keep going.
Okay. So basically, I ran this analysis, and so the first time was for 10, so for 1,000 simulations. In those 1,000 simulations, which would simulate this guy eating chicken for 1,000 days.
Yeah.
If you had to guess how many times he got sick in the 1,000 days, what would you guess? Just based on nothing but your intuition.
I would guess in 1,000 days that he got sick 20 times.
Close. He got sick 7 times.
7 times. Yeah. See, I was going back and forth. Like,
yep.
5 was where I was on the low end, and 20 was on the high. So, okay.
So if you take that number and you do the math, basically he's not getting sick on a regular basis, but it would correspond to, if you even it out over a long period of time, he's getting sick about every 142 days. Okay.
So we have some, so what I'm taking away from this, Don, is that we have some days to go.
We have more days to go. And now, interestingly, that's with chicken that is positive about 14% of the time. So a lot of times what's happening is he's eating a piece of chicken that has salmonella on it, but the dose is low enough that he's not getting sick. Now, and again, if we really wanted to be exhaustive about this, we should do this many more times. But I ran it again with what if we do the experiment for 10,000 days? So new analysis, 10,000 days, okay? The number of times that he gets sick in 10,000 days. Now, if the math held from the first to the second and we got the same numbers, it would just be 10 times more days. So it would be 70, right?
Yeah.
In this analysis, because of just the way the random numbers worked out, only 46 days. So it drops by not quite half, right? So it would be 4.6 on the smaller one instead of 7. So 7 versus 4.6. But what we're seeing here, and so in this particular analysis, he's going to get sick every 217 days. So he could play this game. I say we could, again, if we wanted to get fancy with the math, we could say, what's the odds that he could make it risk-free through a year? I think the odds of making it through a year risk-free are pretty low. But again, same sort of results. In this case, about 17% of the time, the chicken is positive for salmonella. So again, a lot of positive chickens out there. Not everyone, certainly. And I think the data I found from the USDA baseline was like something like 1 in 5. So 20% chance. The prevalence is about right. We don't add in an extra prevalence because we've got this distribution that spans that range. So bottom line is this guy, I don't think he's going to make it a year if he's being truthful with us, but it's not surprisingly that how long has he gone?
79 days. We're in the, still good. Thank you for doing that. Really, because I think this is very, it's one of the conundrums that we have in communicating like food safety, which is exactly this, right? Like I did this thing and I never got sick.
Right.
And it's like, that's checks out like that. Absolutely. Yeah. But the more times that you do it, the more likelihood that you might get sick. Right. Goes well, up. Right. And, I don't know if and I said that right, but
yeah, no, you absolutely did. And let's frame the question in a different way. Let's say instead of one guy on the internet, you're a food company and you make 10,000 servings of a product that has this same characteristic. Well, you're getting 46 people sick, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's enough that it's probably going to make it through the underreporting factor, right? And certainly if you had 100,000 servings, you're making hundreds of people sick, which is certainly going to be dozens of people getting sick. So if a company were to do this, then they are for sure having an outbreak that's going to be detected and people are going to know about it. So,
yeah. Well, that's good. Well, this is, I don't know, like, I mean, I like that we talked about it here. I feel like we should do something with this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but I don't know. I don't want to do anything with it, but I would love for somebody to take this data and take this guy's like thing and just, here's a paper on, you know, how many days on average can you eat raw chicken before you get a tummy ache? Right. Like, let's answer it with some math. Yeah. Like you did. I mean, you did it.
And it's not really a paper. It's more like a one page white paper,
which
I may do and then just post somewhere and then just say, hey, look, if you're interested in the math, here's what I did and here's what it shows. So
I love it. This is awesome. Thank you. This is so cool. So no,
thanks.
No, don't worry. We're going past my semi hard out because I want to hear the end of this. Like I was not rushing this. This is awesome. Although now we've probably reached the end of our episode. So
I think so.
So, okay. Well, this is awesome. Bye.
Bye. I'm so glad you liked it. I really loved it. Bugging me that I couldn't make time to do it. And it's like, it's not that hard. Just do it. And I was like, I was bored and procrastinating something else. And I'm like, yeah, you know, let me, I need a little bit of math, a little math fix.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. There are times where I'm like, I need a little like food safety education thing. Cause I got to get my mind off whatever other stuff's going on. So yeah, no, that was awesome. I do have time to schedule if you want to do that.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. So let's look at a couple of weeks from now is actually quite good for things that so I could do before, let's say 11:30 on the 18th, which is 2 weeks from today. I don't have anything before 11:30.
Yeah. So I am good for that time. Now we did have, so we're in crazy interview season, right? Huge storms here yesterday. The candidate that finished at the end of the day, got stuck in Salt Lake City going home. The candidate that was supposed to come in never came in. That's been actually rescheduled for the 18th and 19th. I know when they're giving their seminars, but what I don't know is when I'm meeting with them.
Okay.
So, but that's okay. Let's
hold it.
Let's go ahead and just pencil in that morning.
What would be like, I mean, what time would be best for you? Like I could go early. We could go like 9:30 to 11:30, whatever. What would be best?
Let's say 9 to 11.
Okay. Done. That's perfect. I should know,
we should have her schedule or their schedule finalized, soon. And I'll let you know if we need to reschedule that.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. Yep. I'm got it. I'm holding it. And then we're on for Risky or Not on the 15th. I think that's our next one.
Yes. At 8 a.m.
Yep.
Oof.
Yep. Good. We're going to, don't worry. It's going to be awesome. Tax day. Cool. All right, cool. I'm going to pick up a record player. So Sam, so here's what's happened. Sam has all of a sudden gotten into vinyl. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so we spent some time record hunting while we were on vacation, which was great. I've already purchased him a second turntable, but now because we're both into it, we're going to put a third turntable in our house downstairs because I have one in my office and he's got one in his room. But I'm Facebook Marketplace, $30. I'm getting a third turntable.
Cool. Three turntables and a microphone.
Three turntables and a microphone. That might actually be a show title, even though it came in the After Dark. I don't care. I love it. All right, cool. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take
Bye.
Care.
Bye.